Hi, we're speaking to Robin from All Time Conspiracies today. All Time Conspiracies is a fantastic YouTube channel that explores, you can imagine what, conspiracy theories. And in 2015, they did this really excellent summary video about the mysterious death of Marilyn Monroe and the conspiracy theories that it has spawned. So you can find it by going to bit.ly/alltimemarilyn. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Chelsea.
I mentioned it a few minutes ago, but thank you again so much for making the time for this call. I'm really excited to have you.
Yeah, really happy to be here. It's a great podcast. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I was wondering what first drew your attention to Marilyn Monroe? What compelled you to make this video about her?
Well, I think like most adolescent men, I was drawn to Marilyn Monroe for her acting skills back in the day. She's an icon, and I grew up loving films, so I've always been aware of Marilyn Monroe. And it's hard to avoid her anyway these days. You know, there's T-shirts, there's posters, there's graffiti, and even for someone my age, there's Madonna's music video, Material Girl.
Yes.
which is Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. So as when you're looking to conspiracy theories, obviously you look at stuff you're interested in, and it's hard to avoid conspiracy theories surrounding Marilyn Monroe because you love her, you grow up and you think, oh, whatever happened to Marilyn Monroe? And you find out that she died at the age of 36, so young. And of course, that leads you onto this path of all these theories surrounding her death.
Right. That's funny. I stumbled upon her at a young age too. I mean, I suppose we all do. Like you said, she's in our cultural consciousness, right? Like it's hard not to be aware of Marilyn Monroe because she's just so ubiquitous. But I was probably 14, I would say, when I first started reading about her. And I was reading a biography about her that then explored her death. And it was that death that really captivated me because once you start going down that rabbit hole, you really can't come out.
No, definitely. Yeah, you're right. It is a rabbit hole. It really is. And of course, it's tied to much bigger theories and all kind of spirals and spirals and spirals. And you never expect to be looking at Marilyn Monroe's death at the same time as you're looking at weird UFOs in Russia. And all kind of, when you follow the chain long enough, there is always a connection. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Not always a strong connection, sometimes very tenuous, but you know, it's there.
But those are sometimes the most intriguing.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you, Robin, specialize in conspiracy theories. So what do you think are the factors of a story that incite a conspiracy theory or conspiracy theories? Like what are those aspects of a story?
Well, I think it's probably fairly obvious. I imagine you've noticed this as well. But in my opinion, I think there are two things that inspire conspiracy theories to develop. The first is mystery, and the second is a lack of resolution. And I think those are the two main elements. So conspiracy theories at their core are driven by the desire for answers, to rationalize events and experiences that have no obvious explanation, or that were never satisfactorily resolved. And I think that's why, you know, people seeing lights hovering over Area 51, for example, those inspire stories of UFOs because they are UFOs. They are unidentified flying objects. But by that point, by the 50s and 60s, the term UFO had become conflated with the idea of flying saucers and extraterrestrial life. So suddenly, the mystery of these lights flying over Area 51 is solved by saying the government has alien spacecrafts hidden in Area 51. And of course, it doesn't help that the government is so silent and secretive about these things.
Right.
And then I think, and that's why sticking with the 1960s, that kind of era, the assassination of JFK. As you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was murdered by Jack Ruby before he ever went to trial. So I suspect, you know, in the mind of the American public, there's not that catharsis, there isn't that resolution to the story because the criminal, if Lee Harvey Oswald did act alone, he was never brought to justice. You know? And I think that's what inspires these conspiracy theories. Firstly, it's the kind of, how did that happen? And then it's the, we don't have an answer. And in the case of things like JFK, you've got the Warren Commission and the Warren Report, which was an unsatisfactory answer. And I think those are the two key things that inspire conspiracy theories. But if I may, actually, because I spend my life doing this on a daily basis, particularly in recent years, I think conspiracy theorists and conspiracy theories have got a lot of bad press. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. I would say that someone who is considered to be a conspiracy theorist is kind of labeled like a Looney Tune.
Yeah, absolutely. And often with good reason, let's be honest. But I think... I like to think that conspiracy theories come from a good place. You know, they, and sometimes they can come from a healthy place, a kind of a need to question authority and a need for answers, you know, the search for answers. I mean, that's the foundation of science, which we consider absolutely normal. It's the foundation of the field of history and even English literature and stuff like that. You know, people are looking for answers. And I think conspiracy theories, conspiracy theorists do the same thing. And I think it's a bit of a shame that conspiracy theorists have earned this bad reputation and this crazy reputation, because although some of them are out there, at the same time, they can do good work, which is why you get the Edward Snowden leaks and why you get Watergate being exposed and why you find out about the bad reasons Tony Blair and George Bush went to war in Iraq. Because you've got these people who are questioning the truth. And I think I just wanted to add that as an aside, that, you know, conspiracy theories might seem crazy and you might think that a lot of them are crazy people, but actually they're coming from a good place.
I love that. And I'm glad that you, added that, because I completely agree. I think that they do come from a good place. I think, yes, that universal need to have resolution, like you spoke to, and you, I think you mentioned also the willingness to question authority, and and not accept the easy answer, you know. And not all conspiracy theories are that out there.
No, not all of them. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that's a good way to put it. You know, not accept the easy answer. That's a good way of expressing it. And of course, that means, you know, you have a philosophy of, is it Occam's razor, where the simplest solution is often the solution? Mm-hmm. I think that's where people have a problem with conspiracy theories. Because, yes, sometimes the simple answer is the answer, but conspiracy theorists don't always accept the easy answer. I like that. That's good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, in this trial, in the season 3 deliberations trial, that's a topic that comes up later between the defense and the prosecution, is that the defense is trying to argue it's a suicide, and they're saying, guys, stop looking for something that isn't there. The simplest answer is usually the best one. And this, the simple answer is that she killed herself. And it's the duty of the state to argue otherwise. I do love that you're speaking up a defense of conspiracy theories and conspiracy theorists, because who doesn't want to see truth explored and justice done?
Oh, exactly.
Which is in the hearts and minds of every good conspiracy theorist. Let's expose the truth, right? So in your research, what was it about Marilyn Monroe's death that you found the most mysterious or intriguing?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think for me, it's probably the incongruity of the timings of the events. I'm sure you've looked into this. But as you know, Monroe died the night of the 4th and the morning of the 5th, 1962. And it was in her house in Brentwood, California, Los Angeles?
Yes.
Which she'd only bought a few months earlier. It was a brand new house.
Right.
And she wasn't alone in the house on the night she died. She spent the day with her friends, including her psychiatrist, Dr. Ralph Greenson.
Mm-hmm.
And he went home, but her housekeeper, a woman called Eunice Murray, stayed overnight. Now, Eunice Murray's first version of events says that around 12:30, she noticed Marilyn had locked her bedroom door. So Eunice called Dr. Greenson, who came over. He also couldn't get Marilyn to answer the door or the phone in her room, so he broke in through the window He found Marilyn lying naked on the bed, dead, with a phone in one hand. Thing is, they didn't call the police or an ambulance until after 4 in the morning. The ambulance arrived, I think, around 4:30. But then in the coroner's hearing, Eunice Murray, who said that she'd first checked the room about 12:30, told the coroner that she'd noticed Marilyn had locked her door at 3 a.m. And that's about a 2.5-hour, 3-hour time difference. And for me, that's the most intriguing part. That's where, because that's the beginning of the whole affair, is this massive incongruity in the housekeeper's story.
Yes.
And then you've got these, apparently some neighbors whose names I think are unknown, saw an ambulance drive up to the house before 3 a.m. and then got turned away. Nobody knows if that's true, but it's a story that was reported at the time. And then, of course, there's the official ruling, which is that it was a suicide and that Monroe swallowed about 40 barbiturates, which is a horrible thing. But there was no water or any drink in the room. And there wasn't even a glass for a drink to be in. So how did she swallow that many pills? She would have had a gag reflex before she managed to swallow all those pills. So the very foundation of the story of her suicide is rocky. And I think that's the most intriguing part for me. The beginning is flawed.
I completely agree with you. Eunice Murray, the housekeeper, you mentioned one incongruity in her story in the time in which she says she discovered the body, or discovered Marilyn's door was locked, I should say, as opposed to what she stated later. I know that there was another incongruity when she said that she felt something was wrong because she could see the light on under Marilyn's door that late at night. The police pointed out, well, this carpet is so high that you can't see light on under the door to this room. And she said, oh, it's actually the telephone cord strung across the hall that drew my attention to the fact that something was wrong. And so, I mean, her narrative has changed a few times. And
yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? You'd think someone in any mysterious death, let alone someone as high profile as Marilyn Monroe, the story would be straight, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember reading, and I read it in several places. It's really hard, I'll add this, it's really hard to sift through what's true and what's not, because there's so much out there about Marilyn Monroe. And when it comes to her death, there are just like so many narratives. You mentioned that some people report having seen an ambulance arrive at her house and leave. I've seen that as well. I've also heard the narrative that, I believe it was Dr. Engelberg, her personal physician, or no, maybe it was Dr. Ralph Greenson. Someone saw one of these men stick a needle into her chest, what was supposedly adrenaline, in an effort to resuscitate her, and after that she passed away. Yeah. So there are all these like flare-up narratives, and it's hard sorting through them. But at the end of the day, there is this pretty big disparity in time, and I can't get my brain around what was going on for that period of time, those 3 hours or so between the body being discovered and calling the police. I mean, it's so odd. It's such truly, truly odd behavior that it's hard not to hear it and question and say something about this is wrong. Something about this is highly suspicious. This behavior just doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. And this is how it all begins. How the conspiracy theories arrive.
Mm-hmm. So in trying to sort through all of these narratives, something that I've seen consistently stated is that the first officer on the scene, a man named Sergeant Jack Clemens, if memory serves, walked into her bedroom and he stated that it was, quote, the most obviously staged crime scene he'd ever seen.
Right, yeah.
And that, I remember that making a big impression on me as a kid when I read that, because I mean, this is the first officer on the scene, and he's making this really inflammatory statement. And I think that, like you said, the water, there not being a glass in her bedroom, you know, that is something really odd. There's also, in crime scene photographs, there are a lot of photographs of the room that show no water glass. And I think there's one photo in which you can see a water glass, or there's purported to be a photo wherein you see a water glass, which is interesting, because then that's actually born a lot of conspiracy theories in and of itself, because it makes it seem like that was placed. Someone realized there wasn't a glass in the room, and so it was suddenly placed there, but it's not in the same position in other photographs. And that alone is really, really suspicious. But yeah, I agree. I think that 3-hour time difference, you know, between the discovery of the body, like something was going on. Why would these people just remain at her home? And I don't know what. Eunice Murray was washing bed linens. She was like laundering clothes when the police arrived.
Time of night. Yeah.
And that's so suspicious. And the police asked Dr. Ralph Greenson, who's her psychiatrist, who the defendant in our season 3 is based on, what were you doing all of this time? Like you discovered her body at what time, and you called us now, and what were you doing? And he mentioned that he had called the Fox's publicity department and was waiting on approval from the studio, which seemed odd. I know it was a different time. It was like old Hollywood, and studios ran the stars' lives. And I understand it's much different then than it is now. But still, at the time, to the police, that sounded fishy.
Yeah, it sounds like he hasn't got Marilyn's interests at heart. He's got somebody else's interests
right
in mind, hasn't he?
Yes.
I mean, that's particularly suspicious because she'd just been fired by Fox, hasn't she, from the movie she was working on.
Mm-hmm.
Something's Got to Give, which obviously she never finished because she died. But Fox had just fired her, and she was kind of in the middle of she just started negotiations to get rehired. But she wasn't really working for Fox anymore. So it's funny that he should go to them first.
Yes. God, you've really done your homework. You researched so thoroughly. I love it.
Well, no, I know some things. There are other things that definitely are wrong.
I don't know if you've ever had opportunity to see any of the footage from her, from Something's Gotta Give, which was, as you mentioned, her last unfinished picture, but it's really tragic to look at her last work. You know, they've done a documentary wherein they put a lot of that old footage together, and she was so beautiful in her final days. Like, she really looked stunning. And that was right around the time that she sang Happy Birthday, Mr. President.
Yes. Not long after, was it?
Right. I mean, she left the set of Something's Gotta Give in order to fly to New York in order to make that performance, which is another reason why the studio got upset with her.
Mm.
But yeah, it's pretty heartbreaking to watch if you're a fan.
It is. Yeah. It's really sad because it's, all we see is the image, and then you discover that there's something underneath that's, in Marilyn's case, it's not even a dark secret. It's just she's a victim, you know, a victim of trouble, emotional and mental problems. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if she were in the same situation today, would it have ended differently? Because there's so much more support now.
Yes. Yeah. That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, one could argue that she wouldn't have achieved that same amount of star power today because there's just so much more celebrity than there used to be.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But you're right. Her mother's mental condition, her mental condition, they were not as well understood at the time as they are now. And I think that she quite possibly could have received more help and more effective help than she received at the time. So, okay, so we've discussed some of the really odd and quirky circumstances surrounding her death that have made people like sit up and take notice and wonder, hey, what's going on? Can you speak to some of the most common conspiracy theories that have been born from this admittedly suspicious death?
Yeah. So I'll just talk about the two main ones, the ones that I think interest me the most.
Okay.
And I'd like to preface those by making it clear, I don't know if your episodes have done so far. Marilyn Monroe almost certainly had affairs with both President John F. Kennedy and his brother, Robert Kennedy, who was the Attorney General. And the reason I want to mention these is because this is connected to both of the theories I want to discuss. So the first one is that she didn't commit suicide, she was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And the most, I think the most common suspect is that she was murdered by the mob. We know that she was friends, if not a little bit more, with Sam Giancana, who led the Chicago outfit, until he was murdered, I think, in 1956. I could be wrong about that. And Sam Giancana is rumored to have helped get Kennedy elected in 1960. We also know for a fact that he did work for the CIA during the early 1960s. And on at least one occasion, Robert Kennedy wanted to prosecute Sam Giancana, but was asked not to by the CIA.
By the CIA?
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Interesting.
Yeah. They'd recruited Sam Giancana to help assassinate Fidel Castro.
Okay, got it. Which
so is, he was considered an asset, I guess.
Yeah, I did hear that there were plans to assassinate Fidel Castro within the Kennedy administration at the time that Marilyn was, shall we say, close to the Kennedys.
Absolutely. And this that brings us nicely back around to how this theory plays out. The idea is that she is killed by Sam Giancana on his orders. And it's staged to look like a suicide. And the reason she's killed is because Marilyn was so close to the Kennedys. She's rumored to have had this little book of secrets, I think people call it, a private diary where she wrote down everything she knew, including things she'd heard from the Kennedys about their involvement with the mob and their attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro, among other secrets, apparently. Obviously, I don't know if she really had this book because nobody knows where it is, because apparently it was taken by whoever murdered her. The question, of course, is whether Sam Giancana was asked by the Kennedys to kill Marilyn Monroe, or whether he took it upon himself to kill her. This is where the conspiracy theories kind of... There's always... the conclusions of the theories always differ in this show. Some people say, oh, he was asked by the government. Some people say, oh, he's just doing it under his own steam because, hey, he was the mob. He could do what he liked.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the mob one is big. I've also seen in support of that theory that apparently when they renovated Marilyn Monroe's house, and again, is this a narrative? I'm not sure that it's true or not, but I've seen it in a few places, and so it tends to stick in my memory. When they were renovating her house in the 1970s, I could be wrong, but at some point after her death, they found a lot of wires in the house that that demonstrated that her house had been bugged.
Yeah.
And that she was being monitored.
Yeah, exactly. And I've heard that too, and... What I haven't heard, I don't know if you've come across this, is whether people think it was the government or the mob who wired her house. Because there's kind of conflicting... I've heard different stories about who did that.
So have I.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So there's another theory I'd like to talk about, if we've got time.
Yes, please.
Which is, I think it was a British journalist, actually, who did win a Pulitzer Prize. So he's quite a legitimate journalist here, called Anthony Summers. I think in the 1980s, he did some research into Monroe's death. And he said that she did overdose herself. But she didn't die in the house. She actually, that first ambulance that people say they saw coming up to the house and get turned away, he says that the ambulance left with her in it. And what happened was she died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. But Robert Kennedy was in Los Angeles at the time. And he'd just broken up with her. And Auntie Summer says that's why she overdosed. RFK had just dumped her. And Auntie Summer says that RFK was made aware because he was powerful enough and involved enough in Marilyn Monroe that people... informed him when it happened, and he ordered them to take the body back to her house, and then either with the help of the FBI or the Los Angeles Police Department, they made it look like a suicide and that she died in her home. That's another theory. So it's a kind of nice combination. Well, nice, sorry. It's a clever combination. Clever combination of that she was murdered and she committed suicide stories. Kind of like she attempted suicide and then died, but then it was staged to cover up the fact that, or rather to allow Robert Kennedy time to get out of Los Angeles before the news was made public that Marilyn Monroe had done.
You know what? You actually just clarified something for me that never really made sense when I came across that narrative in my research, because I've heard this story that she left in the ambulance and then the ambulance returned her to the house, but I never understood why. Like, no one ever connected that dot for me before, that it was on RFK's direction because it would allow him time to leave the city in order to avoid any association. Because I have heard RFK's name come up a lot, and it kind of bums me out to say that. Like, I'm a fan of RFK, and yeah, the fact that he's so consistently drawn into this narrative and in a very suspicious way is sort of a bummer. But the idea that he was the one that directed the ambulance to return makes that narrative make more sense to me now that you've explained it to me that way.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, he does come up quite a bit when you're talking about Marilyn Monroe's death. And I believe it was somewhere in the Northeast that he was supposed to be that weekend, or that people still allege he was that weekend with his family. But there are neighbors who say that they, or people near the beach that say they heard Bobby Kennedy's chopper arrive at that time and that day, I'm not sure, and that he had a meeting with Marilyn on the day of her death. And, you know, obviously I don't know if that's true, but it was years later that someone was interviewing Dr. Ralph Greenson, who is Marilyn Monroe's psychiatrist, and the person who's our defendant is based on. And I think no one ever really let him alone about Marilyn's death, and he was continually asked that the rest of his life, and someone was asking him about it many years after her death, and he said, ask Bobby Kennedy. Like, you want to know what happened to her? Ask Bobby Kennedy. He made some
remark. Oh, I have heard that, actually. Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
And I think that he took it back and then, kind of recanted that inflammatory statement. And then his son was asked about it. And he's like, I don't know why my dad said that. Like, da, 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 da. But it's so just, it's that's the kind of thing. It just, like, it grabs your attention and it just feeds.
Yeah.
It feeds into this need to understand more, and it certainly didn't quell any conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Right. Why would you say that? Thank you for clarifying that narrative. So you would say the two biggest in your mind are that the mob was behind it, or that it was an accidental overdose, but then there was a cover-up involved in order to for PR, so to speak, to avoid any bad press association with the administration.
Yeah, those are the biggest two. There is another one, obviously. I don't know if you've discussed this in your show yet, but the idea that Monroe faked her death.
The Fab Fit Fun Summer Editor's Box is now available, and it is awesome. If you aren't already familiar, it is a seasonal subscription box for women to discover new products for a life well lived, which is a fun turn of phrase, but also true. This box is delivered 4 times a year for $49.99 a box. But what's crazy is that many of the individual products in here are worth more than the cost of the whole box. Because these are good, really good quality products that I normally wouldn't splurge on. It's pretty exciting to get them, not only as great deals, but in a really fun way. When the FabFitFun box arrived at my door, I didn't know what it was at first, so I opened it up, and it was like a birthday. Just this big box filled with awesome presents. It was pretty fun. I'm a sucker for skincare, and FabFitFun have these really high-quality moisturizers and primers. Not sample sizes, large, sexy, appropriate woman sizes. Like the full bottles. I got this Ahava Mineral Hand Cream, which feels so lovely. I've started toting it around. And I actually used to be a massage therapist, and I've always been this huge proponent of clinical self-massage techniques. In this box was a Maggi Sports Trigger Point Ball, which if you've never used one, and if you've ever woken up with a crick in your neck or suffered from a reduced range of motion in your neck and shoulders because of stress, for example, this is what you need. It's so relieving. I've used it 3 times already. The whole box was luxurious, and that's really the best word. It made me very happy. Sign up for FabFitFun today to get your summer editor's box. Use my code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first box.
go to fabfitfun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99. Go to fabfitfun.com and use my code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
The idea that Monroe faked her death.
Talk about that.
I like this one because it has a happy ending. But the idea is that she was so done with Hollywood and she was so fed up with the pressure and the fame. She was so sad and she'd just got divorced for the third time the previous year. She just got fired from her job and RFK had just dumped her after JFK had dumped her. It's all like, she's just miserable. And so she chooses to fake her death and escape. And through RFK, who's presumably still friends with her, according to this theory, the FBI helped her stage her death and basically put her into the witness protection program.
Wow.
There's no evidence for this, except a lot of people have said they saw her, seen her on several occasions in Hawaii on the beaches.
Really?
As an old woman in the 90s and the early noughties. And of course, there's no way you can really prove that old woman they saw was Marilyn Monroe. But
it's a nice,
happy, quiet life.
I like that one. And you know, I'll say this: there is this photo of her that was taken of her face right after her autopsy was completed. And I wasn't really in the first book I read about her death. It might have been Goddess. I'm not sure. There have been many written, many that I've nerdily read. But I came, you know, there was that section in the middle of the book with a lot of photographs. And on the last page was this photo of her face after her autopsy. And I will remember it for the rest of my life. And I've come across it since and been less shocked. But at the time, I was really young and impressionable. And it's a very disturbing photo. And she does not look like herself. She looks like a wholly different person. And so when it just made me think of it, when you said that there's this theory out there that perhaps she faked her own death, and it made me think about this photo of this, you know, this corpse that looked nothing like her. And I can understand how people would A, want to believe that conspiracy theory, but B, how that could be supported by the fact that she did not look the same in death.
Exactly. And it's funny you should bring that up because I believe the drivers of the hearse, I think it was the hearse, at her funeral, two guys called Alan Abbott and Ron Hast, I think. They didn't say at the time, but years later when they were being interviewed, they said they didn't recognize the corpse at Marilyn. It looked completely different. So it's interesting you should say that you should have that impression on your own, just seeing that photo.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, she seemed unrecognizable to me. And, you know, I know that, you know, she typically, she, when she would put on her makeup, she had a thing, right? Like she would make herself up to look like this, this otherworldly sexual icon. And a lot of that was just this really carefully cultivated image that done with makeup, et cetera. So I'm not surprised that she wouldn't look exactly the same, but I didn't, and maybe in this photograph I'm talking about that was taken right after her autopsy, you know, maybe most people look that different after an autopsy. I haven't seen that many facial photos taken at that
time. Yeah, I've never had one done, so I don't know how I'd look at.
Right, neither have I. But she did look strikingly different, and personally I'm a fan of that theory because I think it's very sweet.
Yeah, me too. I like that one.
Yeah, it's not the most commonly circulated, but maybe it should be. We could all use a little more optimism.
Yeah.
So you've clearly done a lot of research into this. And so I have to ask you, what do you personally think really happened to Marilyn Monroe?
It's difficult to know what to think when you spend so long reading about this stuff.
Right.
I'm sure you found in all your research, you just get so confused by all the evidence. But until something really solid, a piece of evidence that's really compelling arises. It's hard to say, but I think she probably did commit suicide. We know she had a history of mood swings and overdoses and addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why she had a psychiatrist who was with her on the day she died. You know? They were close friends because she relied on him so much. Hopefully over the course of this interview, we've kind of expressed just how tough her life was when she died. You know, she'd gone through a really rough couple of years. And she's only 36, but by that point she'd been in Hollywood for 17 years, I think. You know, she'd been a major star for a long time.
Right. And I'll add really quickly, 36 in 1962, when you're a Hollywood star, is not the same as 36 today. It seemed much older at that time. To hear people talk about her and to read press clippings from that time before she died, they talked about her like she was like over the hill.
Yeah.
She's 36 years old. And so I see what you're saying. Like 36, like at that time, she'd been in Hollywood for 17 years, was it?
Like any child stars, you know, there's that cliche of the child star. I mean, Marilyn wasn't a child star, but she must have been a teenager when she came to Hollywood and started making movies. So, you know, she never got to deal with life properly. She just had this crazy roller coaster. And then, like you say, you know, at the time, sexism was, you know, like at 100%. So she really was considered past her prime. I think when you delve into that and you find out you try to appreciate the kind of condition mentally and emotionally she was in, it's easy to think that she just took on too many pills, although in this case, if it was 40, it was probably 39 too many pills. So I think probably she did commit suicide. As sad as it is to just acknowledge that, I think that's the likely.
Right.
What do you think?
I think that I would, you know, having to choose, I think I would most likely say that she died of an accidental overdose. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as I start, you know, feeling more confident with that answer, I can't help but wonder, okay, well then why all of the incongruous stories from the housekeeper and the psychiatrist, and why the really odd behavior, and why so many details that don't add up after her death. And if it was an accidental overdose, how very weird that her house was wired, and how very weird that this happened. And like, they're just, it's an endlessly intriguing story. And there are questions that will possibly never be answered. Have you ever heard the expression, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I keep thinking about that expression, especially now that I'm getting close to airing the season premiere and we're exploring what happened to her in her death and in the immediate hours following. Like, there seems to be a lot of cover-up for something that's possibly innocent. So
that's a really good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. And you're right. As soon as every moment I think rationally, I'm thinking rationally, I'm just like, oh, it was a suicide or an accidental overdose. As soon as you look into it, there's all these crazy questions and you think something was going on.
Yes. And it's funny. I like the way you phrase that, like the seemingly rational, because I feel like every time that I start feeling confident that it's an accidental overdose or a suicide, that's this part of me that feels, well, I just, you know, what's the most rational decision? Like, what's the most reasonable? Like, it's this inclination to not get carried away, right? Like, to not give any credence to any theories that others would deem as far-fetched. And, you know, as we were discussing sort of in broad terms with conspiracy theories earlier, maybe it's not always a bad idea to explore the far-fetched.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea to just question what you've been told from time to time.
That is beautifully put. I love that. So I want to remind listeners that the video that Robin has done by All Time Conspiracies about Marilyn Monroe is really, really excellent. I'd love for people to check it out if they just want sort of some basic background, an overview of what happened and the theories that have been born from it. So please go to bit.ly/alltimemaryland if you want to see that. Alltimemaryland is all lowercase. And Robin, this was such a fun interview.
I
could talk about this all day, but yeah. I won't make you do that. I do want to ask if listeners want to hear more about conspiracy theories that you cover, where can they find out about them?
Well, we have a YouTube channel. That's the best place to go. It's All Time Conspiracies. All Time is one word, A-L-L-T-I-M-E, and then Conspiracies. Look us up on YouTube and you should find us.
It's an excellent channel. I love watching your videos. I have to say, people should definitely go check those out. I'm a sucker for a good conspiracy theory, and you make really, really eloquent videos that are succinct and beautifully executed. So I appreciate them. I have a lot of fun on your channel.
Thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you. I love your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so kind. As I said, this is a really fun interview, so I would love it if you would be open to potentially coming on again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot more about Marilyn and her death to discuss, so. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for next week's episode, The Timeline of Ava Michaels' Last Day. Were there signs of an impending suicide?